One of my favorite places to visit when I go to San Francisco is the church, St. Gregor of Nyssa. As you enter the building, you walk into a large rotunda with a domed ceiling. And painted around this dome are over 90 life-size portraits created by the artist, Mark Dukes. You can see the figures dance together. Their hands are clasped to the person next to them, dancing eternally around the rotunda. Malcolm X, Margaret Mead, Eleanor Roosevelt dance with Black Elk, Dostoevsky, and John Coltrane, all led by Jesus of Nazareth. They call this display the Dancing Saints. As I wander around the room identifying the figures, I always wonder what made them choose the people and the animals they did choose to paint up there, to classify these people as saints. And they get very annoyed every time I go there and I ask them about who I think should be up there and why they're not. Today I want to talk about saints, which is not a term we often use. The Appalachian saint is used in faith traditions to acknowledge a person who has godlike qualities, someone who is exceptional in their love for others and how they care for our people. A saint may be recognized by popular acclaim, such as we have done with Mother Teresa, or the title may refer to particularly venerated people. Some denominations have specific criteria and an official process to attribute sainthood. For instance, the Roman Catholic faith requires both an in-depth investigation of the proposed candidate and the performance of at least two miracles. Other faiths are not as rigid in who we decide our saints. In a recent questionnaire on Facebook, I posed the question to Unitarian Universalist ministers. I asked them who they considered our saints. The list was long and hotly contested, as you can imagine. There was debate about whether slave owners such as Thomas Jefferson or pro-war supporters such as President William Taft could be honored for the good they did when they also held disturbing beliefs. After sifting through the arguments, I identified some categories of those we revered. These included the visionary. These are those who dream of how the world could be, such as James Luther Adams, who during the early formation of the Nazi Party created a vision of how we might live in right relationship. There's the revolutionary. These are the people who challenge systems and engage in creative change, such as Margaret Fuller, who in the 1830s challenged patriarchy, slavery, and colonialism. There's the spiritual, who lead us out of our intellectual or emotional understanding of the world and connect us to what is sacred and to what is holy. This is a person such as Lindy Ramsden, who draws in our spiritual life as the foundation for doing justice work. There's the theologian, those with the intellectual capacity to format new ways of understanding ourselves in community with the world, someone such as Tandika, who is helping create an understanding of affect theology. And there's the lover of life, who loves the world with passion and connects us to this way of existing with deep gratitude, exemplified by Rebecca Parker, one of our modern day leaders. As I thought of our saints and learned about the flaws each one of them might also have, I thought about how each one of us might be a saint. Our earliest Calvinist ancestors talked about the preservation of the saints, meaning each of us who God has chosen and who will live in eternal paradise. As Universalists grew uncomfortable with Calvinism, we embraced the idea that there's actually something of God in each person. Each of us holds a divine spark. The early churches of New England, the congregational traditions that we grew out of, had an understanding of the community as both the visible and the invisible church. The visible church is what we see here in this building. It's the four walls that surround us, and it's the people who come together in covenant with each other, so agreeing how we will be in relation with each other, and how we will be a community for each other. The invisible church is those who don't come here, who do not have a covenant of how to be together. But because we are universalists, we recognize they also have that divine spark in them. They may not be aware that they have something holy within them, something miraculous held inside their bodies. They may not have the language to talk about their inherent value and may not even feel comfortable recognizing this. These are our invisible saints. When those of us in the visible church move outside our walls into places like the juvenile detention center or refugee camps or prisons, we do this in recognition that we are in the midst of invisible saints in this world. We witness that inherent value, that sacred spark, and we give the language to proclaim, "This person is exceptional. I see that which is holy here." Our missionary message is not the evangelical one that makes us so uncomfortable. It is not about being saved from damnation or calling people to Jesus or about our sinful nature, but it's about how we witness that God-like quality in others. And this is most profound when we are with those that our culture has relegated to the margins. It is not enough for us to remain within the comfort of our building. Lindy Ramsden, the Dean of Student Life at the Starr King School for the Ministry, states that a church that does not work outside its own walls becomes insular and its spirit dies. A church's ministry is about ministering, and that quickly takes you outside the doors of the building. Our role in the community, in the invisible church, has roots in both our Universalist and Unitarian traditions. As early as 1803 in the Winchester Proclamation, Universalists declared that part of our faith included doing good works in the greater community. On the Unitarian side, back in 1826, Joseph Tuckerman experimented with being the first minister at large. He took on the urban poor as his parish. His focus was on the Boston area, attending to the new forms of poverty that went hand in hand with the creation of urban centers with population overcrowded due to the industrialization of work. Tuckerman worked to mitigate some of the physical neglect, alcoholism, and child neglect, but also to address the spiritual poverty that seemed so pervasive in so many. Tuckerman may have been the first, but he certainly wasn't the only one who had a vision of the interaction of our visible church with the invisible church. Today, probably half of those who graduate from seminary move into community ministry instead of parish work. These are the people who believe that our principles don't just make sense here, but these values shed some light on how to make a place in the world that honors all life and all matter on this planet. These are the people who challenge the status quo, who make us see how we can engage in creative change that can benefit so many. They uncover racism, and they call attention to oppression, and they work to dismantle systems that favor the few, the wealthy, and the powerful over the many. These are the people who take our principles to heart and move into the world not to create more Unitarian Universalists, but to declare that there are more saints in the world than we ever imagined. This community ministry is not only the work of those who have taken this on as a profession, but it is the work of each congregation. Within the visible church, we have those who are exceptional in their love and care of others. What I'm trying to declare is that we have invisible saints sitting among us today. We have those who go to the juvenile detention center to tell the youth there, I see you. I see something holy in you. Our invisible saints don't do a good deed then leave, and they don't go to invite others to come to us, but they go into the world to create connection and community. Our largest UU congregation is the online Church of the Larger Fellowship. They have a membership of 3,500, and that number includes over 1,000, nearly 1,000, I should say, incarcerated members. They have brought the message of inherent worth and dignity to these men and women. We may have difficulty describing and even agreeing on who our saints are, and we might argue for a long time about who we would paint on our sanctuary walls, but we have so many invisible saints among us. We have those who are not within our walls, and we have those who do the work of our faith by going out into the world to bring recognition to the value of each person. Today, I want to honor all you saints and say, I see you. I bless you. I'm grateful for you. Blessed be.